Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll check in again with Susan Madsen, director of the Utah Women in Leadership Project. This conversation comes after the Utah legislature eliminated the bulk of UWLP's ongoing funding on the last night of the recent session. We'll talk about the future of Utah Women in Leadership Project, as well as some recent research, including Utah Women in Skilled Trades, are Utah workplaces improving for women, and what Utahns really think about childcare, as well as Susan Madsen's recent op-ed in the Deseret News titled Beyond Politics, the Real Meaning of Advocacy. And we do now bring in again Susan Madsen, who's director of Utah Women in Leadership Project, also professor of organizational leadership in the Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. Susan Madsen, thanks for coming on again.
It's great to be here. I've actually switched over, and the Utah Women in Leadership Project now is fully in USU Extension.
Oh, it's in Extension.
I'm a professor of leadership in Extension now. So excited to be out there. It's a nice fit with the UWLP because we are statewide. We work in every single one of the counties. We have research going out and folks engaged in all counties, which is, as you know, Tom, the mission of a land-grant university. Excited to have those opportunities with Extension.
Yeah, that does make sense. I'll update that bio. So let's start with the elephant in the room. Last night of the legislature, eliminated the bulk of your ongoing funding, transferred that over to a forestry project. That puts USU in a kind of a bad place because that's a project from USU as well, although they'd like to support both. So I guess just first of all, your reaction to that action by the legislature.
Yeah, I've been fairly vocal on LinkedIn and a few places and wrote this editorial and worked with the Tribune. They wanted to do a story on it. And I've used the words shocked, totally shocked and disturbed. Those are the two words that I've used the most because we had no warning, no debate. Even the legislators themselves. In fact, last Friday, it was an event connected with two more legislators who I hadn't talked to in the last few months, and they had missed it. They didn't even know that it happened. And they're like, what can we do to help? And so no transparency with that. And kind of bypassed the democratic process, right? And that happens occasionally when it's the last day of the session, when things are pushed and so forth. But Tom, as you can imagine, we have been working so hard with a small staff for years and been at USU for six of those years to produce really important and rigorous research that helps inform the public, and then taking that research to practice. And so this was disheartening, shocking, disturbing, all of those words that could happen. Caught me totally off guard because it was ongoing funding. And so it's been interesting, especially when any legislator, I probably chatted with 20 of them, had no idea before that it was happening. And a couple of them that I emailed that or I texted that afternoon, they had not heard it. And I said, what's going on? And so they did some digging to figure out what was going on. So interesting.
Yes,
but really
for sure.
Disheartening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not just for us. We've gotten hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, I would say even thousands, including the comments, about 30,000 views on a LinkedIn post of people distraught as well and know that the value of what we do at the Utah Women in Leadership Project and feel betrayed themselves.
Talk about the value of the project. What sorts of work do you do? What are people saying that they value?
Well, we've had this project going for Over 17 years, and my mission has always been to strengthen the impact of Utah girls and women. And I always say when I'm speaking, Tom, though, that when you strengthen the impact of girls and women, you're strengthening boys and men and families as well. It's not either or. And so we are really our biggest offering and our most unique offering is that we are the research hub for anything girls and women. So there might be a few things that relate to topics in other areas, but we're the ones that put out research on all topics related to even some of it home and family, a lot of workplace, like the pay gap, like childcare, entrepreneurship, women starting businesses, and so forth. I've been a really strong vocal voice in the state for lots of years on the importance of women going to college, graduating, returning, whatever point, and then continuing to, if you have associates, continue to bachelor's. And we have seen progress there. Tom, I think I've mentioned on your show before that we have the designation, unfortunately, of being the state that has the biggest gap in graduate degree attainment between men and women. So we're so far behind every other state on the percentage, the number of women who get graduate degrees, which then, as you know, Tom, the level of education is often linked to women in leadership roles, especially in business and organizational. I say business and because schools are employers and nonprofits and all of those others as well. So that's what we do, and then we create and offer resources based on research. So everything is based on research, and then give tools to people all over the state in terms of a bolder way forward for them to use the research, use informed, their informed voices to help on the ground level, to help reduce violence in their counties, to use their voice to have things better for their children. So we do a lot of good. So the three main things: research, resources, and then we do convene events around the state, and we'll be doing more of those and then webinars as well. Thank you for asking.
Tell me a bit about the funding people you're wanting to know. USU has talked about bridge funding for a year. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, well, the president and his cabinet and also our advancement office have talked, and we're planning on them, as they've committed to do, finding this bridge funding, meaning finding funding for the next year since we don't have the ongoing funding anymore. So otherwise, we would be pretty much done, except for me and one other employee that's funded directly from USU. All other staff would be finished by end of June. And so we appreciate the bridge funding to get us through, and then they'll be in conversation with us about how do we find more ongoing funding as well to continue this. We're the only institution or body or entity, whatever you want to call us. We're a project that does research, and the research is on women and girls specifically, and the research is clear in terms of societal change, in terms of any kind of change, that you really need to base good change interventions on good data. And so when you take away the data, you're just floundering, throwing spaghetti at the walls and trying to see what sticks. And we don't have time for that. We need to do the things that are right. We're high on domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse. Too many people struggle in that space and have been abused. That's not something we want to push out and say, oh, we'll really get serious about supporting people that do that work maybe in 5 years. Nah, we need to do it now. And there's good groups that are doing that. They just need the research and the resources to help them out, and help our partners, our nonprofit partners, especially, and our government partners, have even a bigger impact than they are right now.
You mentioned you've talked to several legislators, some of which were kind of blindsided by this and seem supportive
Yes.
of your organization. Do you think this can be reversed next session or in interim?
My hope would be, I haven't been able to have a good discussion yet on that with the top administration at Utah State University. But our hope is, because I will say that a lot of legislators do support the work we're doing. And so if we go through the democratic process, I believe we'll have a lot of support, since we're the organization that provides so much information to so many others on topics related to girls and women. So that's the hope. The other path could be, you know, the university identifying a larger donor to make an endowed entity and so forth. So those discussions are ongoing. But are important. So we're just going forward with trust at this point that we'll have that bridge funding to help us go past the next month or two into the next academic year.
How best for people to look up Utah Women in Leadership Project? Interested in research or anything else about the project?
Yeah, I really, you know, our easy website for people to get in there is utwomen.org, and that goes to our USU website, but I found that one's easier for people to remember. And pretty much any topic related to girls and women, if you go and look at our research tab, you'll see that you're going to be able to find a lot of things. And what I found through the years, what the research tells us, is one of the first ways to use your voice and get involved in doing good things for our state is to actually understand what the data are. Understand what the issue are, understand, you know, if you're learning about domestic violence, what does that really mean? And so these reports that we have go through, help teach people, and then give the data that we have. So, good question. I don't know if I tackled it perfectly,
yeah.
but that's how people can find more research and find more information. More about the editorial that I wrote, if you search Susan Madsen and the Tribune, the name of it is What Utah Stands to Lose When Women's Progress is Treated as Optional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go check that out as well. I want to turn to some of the research and some of the topics that you cover. You know, wide range, utwomen.org is where to go to find Utah Women in Leadership Project. We're talking with Susan Madsen, a director. I want to maybe start with childcare. You had a recent article on LinkedIn. This is based on a recent survey. You've done a lot of research on childcare. One thing that struck me, you describe Utah as a childcare desert. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it has been termed in some national reports, and there's some other states as well, that there, when you look at the number of kids and even look at the percentage of women who work for pay, I'm always careful with that, Tom, because we have a lot of people that work in their homes and don't get that credit, right? But when you look at those statistics and the information on the number of women, the number of children, all of those things, what we know is, and from just those numbers, that we are a desert. And then you get into all of the qualitative data that we've collected from hundreds, if not thousands, of women. It's reality, not just the numbers, but it's reality. And that just means there's not enough, especially licensed childcare providers, but childcare providers in general. And I'll tell you, I've heard it from my own daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And who 2.5 years ago had twins, and then had she's now 7, and the twins are 2.5, and she's a nurse, she's a psych nurse, and you know, even the full time during the 8-to-5 slots are filled around her. Yet for nurses and those that have schedules that are not always predictable, There's pretty much not any available childcare. And she's had some quotes in the last couple of years with the three kids. It was like $20, $25 and per hour. So that means she would make like $5 an hour or something. And then you put gas in and that's something else, right? So we just don't have enough childcare, and I'm really concerned about licensed childcare. So the license means that there's just some oversight in terms of ensuring that they've gone through the criminal checks, and that they have a safe place, even if it's in their homes, and that they are certified in terms of CPR and some other things like that, which seems pretty basic.
What's the solution or solutions? We do, I assume we know some things that might work, maybe lack of will on government part or other entities, but what would work?
Well, that's a good question because that's been hard, and it's really hard in more of a conservative state as well, because what we know as well, when you look at the research, is that childcare in not just in Utah, but in the United States, is what's called a market failure. And so that means typically when you're starting a company or you're making a product, you need to have the product at a price that people will want to buy it, but then also make money for the person, right? You have to have those two. That doesn't really work with childcare. So people who are the consumers of childcare, it's so expensive. Yet the people that work in the childcare industry are so low paid, and they don't make, in fact, many of them live in poverty. And so when you put those together, it just doesn't work for the market. So what the research tells us and what practice tells us is you have to have an intervention. And that comes really from federal, from state. And so other states, have a lot more state funding going into that. We still, in our state, more conservative states as well, lean toward the statement that childcare is more of a private issue, not a public issue. So families should take care of that and not have it be a public issue. But I think more and more legislators, more and more leaders are understanding actually families are not able to do this. And so we can't have employees, we can't have the state and our economy be strong if we don't get involved as a state. And so it comes down to allocations and support from the state. Of course, the state wants employers to get involved, and we do have some great employers that are involved as well. But Tom, it may sound simple, but I haven't been an expert in this space, but I've been doing work for years, and it is complex. Let me just put it out there. I can throw out a few things, but it's more complex when you get deeper and deeper.
You did a survey on childcare. I just want to quote from your conclusions. You say these findings reinforce what families, providers, and employers have long known. Childcare is an infrastructure. It supports a parent's ability to work, strengthens early learning, contributes to healthier communities. So I guess respondents to this survey are telling us this is important and why it's important. I guess just have to solve that disconnect between, lawmakers and others to solve the problem.
Absolutely. We asked point blank questions. And in this survey that we did in the fall of 2025, we had over 5,200 Utahns responding, and people in every single county. And in general, our statistical mean on a 1 through 7 scale of agreement, basically, yes, Utahns agree that it's a problem and that it's a concern. And we had one question about should leaders and lawmakers get involved, and pretty much Utahns said absolutely that's what needs to happen. So that's interesting because sometimes on our survey we want to increase the awareness on this People know it's a problem. We don't have to increase the awareness. And they believe that families in Utah need help.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk with much more. A lot of the research being done at Utah Women in Leadership Project. We have the director, Susan Madsen. We'll have more following this break.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the Hollywood Latino icon, John Leguizamo. I sit down with the actor, comedian, and producer. We talk about his new show, his most unforgettable roles in all the movies, and we ask the question, where are all the Latinos in Hollywood? That's next time on Latino USA.
Tune in Tuesday morning at 11 here on UPR.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. Do you know our show? Okay, well, either way, I'm going to tell you about it. We make stories, old-fashioned stories that hopefully pull you in at the beginning with funny moments and feelings and people in surprising situations, and then you just want to find out what is going to happen and cannot stop listening. That's right. I'm talking about stories that make you miss appointments and ignore your loved ones. This American Life.
Tune in Saturday mornings at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're checking in with Susan Madsen, who's director of the Utah Women and Leadership Project. You can find them at utwomen.org. And Susan Madsen, in addition to being director of the organization, professor of leadership, was it, with USU Extension?
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
You moved over to Extension, which makes sense. Still at USU. So let's talk about more of this research. I was interested in this, again, a LinkedIn article that you did. Here's the headline. Are Utah workplaces improving for women? The latest data says it depends. So tell me about this one.
Well, we did research, again, you know, in terms of our fall study that we just talked about. We did research on organizational strategies and what companies are doing, and all of the things about childcare and pay gap and so forth. And it really does depend. It depends on the company. It depends on what we found in our research are those people that tend to have more education, more, if you have more education, Tom, you typically make more money. Not always, but most of the time in the research. And so if you're in that bucket of people, they tend to feel like they belong more in their workplaces. They tend to feel like there's more, the companies they work for, the organizations have family-friendly practices. They tend to, so it's interesting. It depends on who you are and where you live as well. We definitely saw in terms of workplaces and discrimination and some various kinds of things like that, that, you know, there were higher problems in certain counties and, you know, the rural versus urban, but even rural, there were a pocket of counties. I don't have the data right in front of me, Tom, but there's a pocket of counties where the people feel like their businesses, their workplaces were more friendly. And then some rural counties where it was not the case. So what the powerfulness of our research is we had such large samples, and also we had representatives taking the surveys from all over the state. Some of our smaller counties, we didn't have a big representative sample, so we don't include them in some of our individual county data. But it's interesting to see the patterns. We do have a lot of work to do in certain areas, like childcare, like we just talked about. And one of the things that pops up in our literature as well is that most people know that there is discrimination against women and that there's sexual harassment against women. Yet what we continue to find year after year is they don't believe, most Utahns don't believe that their organizations would do the right thing if people, you know, came forward with discrimination and claims. So in terms of some organizations, like I said, a lot of people feel like they belong, there's good things, but it matters the organization and the awareness. What we know is that the more we see differences, we can better serve the people because we can see their differences. And that's not the view that some people are taking these days. They're like, let's not see any differences in terms of race and gender and all of those things. But it's such a critical piece of our identity.
Any progress on the gender pay gap? Utah ranks pretty bad on this, don't we?
Yeah, we are. We bop around in different things, you know, states 1 through 50. We are always in the bottom five, though. And so we kind of bop around. It depends on which one you're looking at. And we're, I think we were 50th like a year or two ago, and I think we're 47th. So Wyoming is down there, Louisiana, a few states like that. So it's the pay gap is a complex thing as well. That's one of the problems. What we know is that we have some really leading organizations. Many in our 100 Companies Champion Women, we saw this in our data, that are taking it on themselves, and they're saying, we're going to have a pay equity audit at the least once a year. We've had some of our forward-thinking companies say, we're doing it every quarter, and we're doing it for race, you know, ethnicity, we're definitely doing it with gender, and some other things to make sure it's apples versus apples, right? How much education they have, how many years they've been in the workforce, all of those things. So it's apples to apples. And so, and they make adjustments. I love that, Tom. They're like, okay, we found some issues. But it takes some real expertise to go deeper and look for that. It's just not, when we look at the pay gap, the general numbers, like 72, 73 cents on the dollar, and the national, that's Utah national, it's about 82 cents to the dollar. That one is kind of hard to wrestle with. But when you get down to, because there's so many things that you take in consideration with that, but when you get down to it, I mean, people's opinions, again, were like childcare. Is there a pay gap in Utah? Almost everybody that took the survey said, yeah, there's a pay gap. And then we said, is there still a pay gap when you consider your, you know, all of the various kinds of things, your educational level, your career breaks, and all of that? And most Utahns get it. They say, yeah, there's still a problem. And the research tells us that even when things are you kind of narrow down that pay gap in terms of education and career breaks and all of that, there's still a section of discrimination. And Utah and more sexist states like Utah will have a bigger discrimination gap. That's just what happens. And that doesn't always come from just men. We as women are socialized into that, the, you know, that gap as well. So it is, I wish we could say in 1 year we've made huge progress, or in 2 years, but it's hard, it trickles down. And most of the data on that one come out of the U.S. Census. Mm-hmm. So that's where we see that data.
What is it about Utah that, you know, you talked about Utah as one of those sexist states. We're always in the bottom five. You say, what are some of the factors why Utah's kind of living there?
Yeah, it's very common, like I said, in more conservative states where you say men should do this and then women should do this. You tend to have higher levels or broader or a bigger gap in what is called occupational segregation. And so this one's tricky because people will push back and say, well, women are choosing. So in more sexist states, you tend to have significantly more women choosing lower paying positions, because any position that has more women in there is going to be lower paying. When you get more men in that, then the pay goes up. And so Utah, we have that. So we still have a lot of socialization with our girls and young women coming back, coming up that there are certain fields that women should go into and certain fields that men should go into, and they shouldn't cross. We still hear messages. And so we're behind the nation because we're still so prominent. Yet, Tom, I would say that people that are in certain IT positions, in terms of business positions and starting getting business degrees and so forth, which we have lower numbers, can be incredibly family friendly. Those often are even more family friendly than an elementary school teacher, right? Because you can do it at home. So those gender norms are kind of breaking down, and we're making a little progress there, but that really is one thing that causes occupational segregation. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the more education you have, even into those master's degrees, the higher salaries you have. So if we have less women getting those higher education and being in the leadership roles that come with more education, those are problems. And of course, honestly, I mean, I'm a very religious, spiritual person, but the more that you have a religious culture, no matter what religion, you typically see some of these issues as well.
I want to follow up on the graduate degrees. My understanding is these days, I don't know if Utah follows the trend, a lot of higher ed, more women than men getting bachelor's degrees. What happens with graduate school?
Well, in most states around the nation, I think there's only three or four where you have more men getting those degrees than women. So around the nation, we don't have the same problem in Utah. So Utah's very different, and that's why we have such a big gap. There's a social, cultural thing that women really shouldn't get graduate degrees here. Yeah, we have been fortunate since I've been working on this topic and a lot of our partners that women have increased their attainment. They're going to college, graduating from college in the bachelor's degree level. We used to be significantly behind, and now we are. But in other states, there's significantly more women getting all of the degrees, which for some people, they were like, that's great. Well, it is great, yet we have to have men getting bachelor's degrees and graduate degrees too. So we still have that in Utah, and so it's interesting. I don't think there's messaging and encouragement to young women to get graduate degrees still. We haven't really had bandwidth, we as a whole, as a state, as those of us that are working in the space, to really say, hey, consider graduate degrees. But I think we need to go in that direction.
Let's take another break. We're talking with Susan Madsen, who's director of Utah Women in Leadership Project. You can find them at utwomen.org. We'll mention the podcast, Utah Women in Leadership Podcast, Utah Public Radio proud partner with that. You can find it at utwomen.org, I believe, and also over on upr.org. When we come back from break, I want to talk about a couple of very interesting pieces. This one, The Hidden Ways Language Undermines Women at Work. Very interesting to me. And also an op-ed piece for the Deseret News, Beyond Politics, the Real Meaning of Advocacy. We'll talk about those pieces following this break.
This is Science by the Slice. Large birds of South America, including brightly colored toucans, face serious survival challenges. Deforestation from expanding agriculture and mining is shrinking habitats. Hunting and collisions with human-built structures also affect bird populations. USU ecologist Noel Beckman and her students are exploring whether interaction rewiring, that is, changes in interactions with new or different existing species, can counter negative effects from the loss of big birds. With their large beaks and bodies, big birds aid dispersal of the seeds from fruits they eat. Beckman says replacement species could mitigate, but not eliminate, the ecological effects of loss of big birds.
This segment of Science by the Slice is brought to you by the USU College of Arts and Sciences, offering degree programs in the sciences and mathematics. Details at artsci.usu.edu.
You're You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're checking in with Susan Madsen, director of the Utah Women in Leadership Project. A lot of research that she does and her team as well. We're giving you some of the highlights. I want to start this segment, Susan Madsen, with this, research snapshot, Utah Women's Stats. Utah Women in Skilled Trades. This is a part of a larger piece. So tell me about this one.
Yeah, we just released this one. We really had some good reviewers out of our construction companies, out of the Utah Women in Trades, has a whole organization on this and has been funded nationally to do the work they do. And I've been feeling like we needed to do this for about 3 or 4 years, even though I'm a real proponent of getting as much education as you can, including those graduate degrees, right, and PhDs and so forth. Yet it's also important. There's certificates and apprentices and apprenticeship programs, right? And so we really wanted to do a report and get the data that we could in the state on Utah women in skilled trades. Things like craft laborer, carpenter, mason, brick and block, heavy equipment operators, iron workers, pipe fitters, painters, roofers, and we always picture those as male jobs, and most of the men are in those occupations. Yet there are a very low percentage, but there are women in those positions as well. And honestly, more and more, these positions are pretty high-paying positions, those skilled trades are. And there are women that have not had the opportunity to go to college in terms of associate degrees and so forth, but are supporting families. Maybe they have a partner, sometimes they don't, and they need some good paid positions. And honestly, some women are driven and like those more masculine, what we've termed masculine positions. And I have met men who are nurses and do things that have been traditionally female. And so I always say, do what you love, do what's there. And so we went through and really documented the demand. There is a big demand for these skilled trades positions. And there's apprentices, you know, apprentices that positions that are available and so forth. So what we did, and I won't give you all the numbers because people wouldn't appreciate that many numbers, is to really document in that construction area and other areas, where are we at in Utah and how much do people get paid for those? And then the percentage of women and what's going on in terms of those. We did have one question on our survey in the fall that we just talked about that said, jobs in trade fields are good career choices for women. And actually, a lot of Utahns, we have a scale from 1 to 7, 1 being strongly disagree, 7 being strongly agree. And it was almost a 6, between a 5 and a 6. So more Utahns are saying, kind of being open to that, you know, if women want to be in these fields, you know, let them be in these fields. And I've seen data that some of the best welders are women because of attention to detail, right? So just felt like we should do this and really document, because there's nothing else that's ever been put out in Utah that gives voice, gives experience to women that are in these fields, and gives more girls and young women opportunities to even consider whatever they choose, Tom. A lot of times we don't even have the choice as women to think about these careers that have been viewed, quote, masculine.
Let me turn to language. Since you did this article for Forbes, I believe, the hidden ways language undermines women at work. And this is kind of expanding on a previous article, why calling women girls is a bigger deal than you might think. So I guess, first of all, we'll go through you have 6 points here, specific examples. But overall, I guess the language we use does have a power, doesn't it?
Oh, very much. That one piece was one of the most popular pieces that I wrote for Forbes. Tens of thousands of people viewed that one on why it's bigger. It's a big deal to call women girls. And it is. And so you can read that. But I wanted to expand on that. And what are some other things, often subtle? And so one of the things that I was taught, I was called out on some of these things years ago, even 20 years ago. So then I learned more about them. And one is referring, and we still occasionally in our report, there's very we say female instead of women. Women is, it matters how what the context is, but it seems harmless, right? We say female or male versus women. But it really does quietly reinforce gender hierarchies. And one example is the growing tendency to use female as a noun. So here's an example. We need more females on the board. But female is a biological classification, and it's also used for plants and animals and of course humans too. But using the word women really centers the individual as a person, not just a classification. The same would be true for men versus male, but you end up not seeing that very often. You see it used for women. So that's one thing. And I've really tried not to use that. And one thing, Tom, if you start paying attention, you'll see this all over, but labeling women by gender. And so we say a woman legislator, a woman CEO, a woman, you know what I'm talking about? We say that because it's like, oh, this is an exception. Yet we don't do that for men. We don't say, Tom, you're a male show host here. And so
Or the, I guess my favorite example in your article, we don't say I'm going to a man doctor.
yes.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't say that. And I think in some areas it's getting more common. So we drop that women word. But it does, I wanted to say in academic research, you just use the last name. And that's one of the things. You don't focus on man or woman and first name. And there's still a tendency, especially in international settings, to say Mr. and Ms. or Mrs. And that is a total gender thing. And so, if we want to look at just people, don't, not gender, like the competence of people, we don't do that. That was our number three too. Sometimes we really especially for women, focus on the relationship status. And that's what we're doing when we say not as much Mr., right? It's Ms. or Mrs. And now Ms. doesn't or Miss, right? All of those are relationship status. And that really isn't something to consider when you're listening to people. So those are a couple. Those are the first three. You want me to keep going?
Yeah,
Mention?
certainly. Yeah.
Okay, great. Number four, really, another subtle but really damaging pattern lies in how women's labor, our work, is described. And researchers say that rather than being credited for leading or managing or producing, women are often said to, and I catch myself doing this occasionally about women, helping out or supporting. And so even when that's not the case, I mean, I've heard women say that this has happened in meetings where partners of a law firm are together and the woman is a partner. But thank you for helping in this or whatever, and that language is not used for the men. So being careful about that and giving people, all people, credit for what they're doing, not just helping. But if you're going to do helping for some people, do helping for men too. It's just trying to be equal. But it's a pattern, and we're used to doing it. Number five out of the six is appearance. You know, Tom, I was going to bring appearance in because that is something that just happens. Wemmet's appearance is also really foregrounded in the ways that undermine their authority. So comments about hair and clothing, attractiveness. What's interesting about that is women, I've smiled when I've heard this because women do this to other women quite a bit. We're like, oh, what a cute, you know, but often it's not right in a meeting. So we have to be careful as women too. But oftentimes, oh, here's an example. She's so well-dressed for a CEO. What they mean is she's well-dressed for a woman CEO, right? And so we don't typically do that to men. We do it a lot more to women. In fact, we did a whole research study a number of years ago on women in politics, and the number of people or the number of even articles written about women in politics that referred to their looks, their appearance, compared to men is striking. And then I think the last one are just compliments that are really more backhanded. Like scholars have found that terms like sweetie, honey, dear, those kinds of things. And Tom, a couple of months ago, I was in the South, and that sure comes up a lot in the South. But they're not really endearments in the workplace. They're more dismissals. They shrink a woman's authority and introduce just things that are not as professional in that. You know, sometimes, you know, words like chick or even gal, I'm kind of mixed on gal because guy and gal are the two terms that are more equal. Or she's so tough for a woman, or there's just different things. You know, people sometimes with me say, oh, I can't say anything these days. Yet, if we really want to treat people well, with kindness, with professionalism, I found that I have had to change some of the patterns that I have for communication. It's not just me calling out men, right? Women, we do that as well, too. More men do that. Let me just be clear, Tom. But women can do that as well. So just learning how to refine your language, paying attention in the workplace when it happens. And even the governor years ago said that someone in his cabinet called him out on a couple of things. And he was like, I didn't realize that was offensive. I've just seen it. I've been taught that. But it makes sense that I'm diminishing the value by using certain words when I don't use those for men. So I think it's a fascinating piece. I hope people will go to that. It's on our homepage. If you go to our homepage, again, utwomen.org, there's a little box on the right that has some of my latest writing. And that's still in that box. So you can go pick that up. And it's a quick read, but it's really informative.
Yeah, fascinating. And you know, something I think a lot of us need to work on. I think we'll maybe close with this one. A piece you did for the Deseret News, Beyond Politics, the Real Meaning of Advocacy. What did you want to do with this one?
Oh, I was really inspired by this because the day before I wrote this, I was kind of called out for doing advocacy work by someone. And I'm like, wait, I don't think they understand what the word advocacy is. That's a real positive thing. And it's not all about politics. And so we learn to be advocates. And if we're not being advocates in our lives, we're not doing our jobs. Because advocacy, let me read a definition I put in there. To advocate is simply to use your voice, presence, or influence to help someone else. And by that definition, many of us are advocates every single day. And I really highlight my advocacy. I have strengthened that by being a parent all through the years. When you take them to the doctor, when you meet with the teacher at school or administrators or coaches, we're being advocates for our kids. When we're even saying, how can I help my children better? That's being advocates. You know, just even things like, you know, getting kids to school on time, setting boundaries, all of those are advocacies. And second, I took out my role. When you say, well, educators shouldn't be advocates, you shouldn't be out there helping. Well, that word advocacy and that word advocate, I wouldn't be a good teacher, a good educator. And I used to be a junior high teacher as well. Unless I advocated for my students, they need supplies, they need space, they need various things. Teaching my students to be advocates is an important. And then I used a couple more, but the last one I'll mention because we're pushing, I know, to the end here, is advocacy is a friend or family member. Here's a direct quote from my article. Third, advocacy is a friend or a family member who stands beside a woman after sexual assault and helps her take the steps toward care and safety and care. Advocacy also often begins in intimate circles with people a woman trusts enough. And that can be a friend or a sibling or a partner that encourages her to go to the hospital or go report it to law enforcement or is there. That's advocacy. So I'm not a fan of, in fact, things I write about more these days are things I'm irritated with. Can I just admit that? But I'm not a fan of people using that word only for one thing, and that is politics. Yes, that is advocacy, but let's use that word for us to use our voice, use our head, heart, and hands to help anybody around us, including our own children. And for me, being a little bit older, my own grandkids.
Finally, just 30 seconds on this one. How would you suggest people, what action would you have people take on behalf of advocating for Utah Women Leadership Project?
I love that. I would say you could do quite a few things. One is to just check out A Bolder Way Forward, which is aboulderwayforward.org. We have a great tab now, a page on our tab called Take Action. And so that you can go on any of our 18 spokes, there's all kinds of topics, many of that we've talked about, and find actual steps for themselves, for their families, but also for their company or organizations or communities. And so I would say these are all research-based too. So I would say check that out and then just pay attention. Join me on LinkedIn. I publish a lot. I post a lot on there and become educated. One of the first things you can do as an advocate is to learn more about the topic you want to use your voice. So it's not just opinion. It's your voice is based on research and fact.
All right. UTWomen.org is the place to go to find the Utah Women in Leadership Project. We'll mention the Utah Women in Leadership Project podcast, which UPR partners on. You find that at upr.org or utwomen.org as well. Susan Madsen's been with us. She's director of Utah Women in Leadership Project and extension professor of leadership at Utah State University. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.